1 year ago, American Organic Energy broke ground on a facility that would recycle organic material on Long Island. CEO Charles Vilgiati says this anaerobic digester is expected to open next summer.
Anaerobic digestion is not new, and it is not even new to this country. What is developing is anaerobic digestion for food waste.
Anaerobic digesters are often used in agriculture, but the facility in Yaphank would be designed for a residential area. It's expected to take in 210,000 tons of waste, fats, oils, and greases from food scraps and organic materials each year. You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut, New York region. George Santos is expected to announce a re-election campaign. Governor Lamont wants to increase tree canopy cover in Connecticut's cities. And the state's northeast corner is being called a food desert. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garun. Long Island Congressman George Santos is expected to announce his 2024 re-election campaign today. His term has been met with scrutiny on both sides of the aisle. WSHU's Zania Gonickberg has more.
Santos is under investigation for possible campaign finance violations and for allegedly lying about his resume to get elected. Now, Republicans and Democrats, including Nassau County Legislator Josh Lafazan, are exploring challenging Santos to make sure he doesn't get re-elected.
George Santos fooled us once. There is not one person in this district who would let him fool us again.
Nassau County Republicans say they won't support Santos. So far, Afghanistan war veteran Kellen Curry seeks to challenge him in a Republican primary. The Santos campaign lost money in the first quarter of 2023 after being ordered to refund over $8,000 in contributions. Zinia Gonickberg, WSHU News.
Governor Lamont wants to increase tree canopy coverage in Connecticut's largest cities. He says it'll be good for air and water quality and will reduce temperatures in the summer. WSHU's Molly Ingram has more.
A bill in the state Senate would require Connecticut municipalities with more than 100,000 residents and the state's 25 environmental justice communities to have at least 5% of their area covered by tree canopies. Lamont made a visit to New Haven, one of the impacted cities, on Monday.
There were a lot of trees in this city many years ago when it was Elm City. We're bringing New Haven back to its former glory, starting in the most distressed communities where people need it the most.
The bill passed the Joint Legislative Environmental Committee and has been referred to the Office of Legislative Research. If approved, municipalities would need a plan in place by January 2024. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
The town of Stratford, Connecticut, is considering an exoneration for a woman executed for witchcraft in 1651. WSHU's Davis Donovan has more.
Goodwife, or Goody Bassett, was one of 11 people executed for witchcraft in Connecticut in the 1600s. There aren't many details about her life or execution, just a quick reference to the trial in historical documents. Her name is now used for an ice cream parlor in Stratford. The town's historical society proposed the resolution, according to Hearst Connecticut Media. It comes as the state of Connecticut is considering an exoneration and apology for all those convicted of witchcraft in the 1600s. Davis Donovan, WSHU News.
There aren't many grocery stores in Connecticut's northeast corner, and there are even fewer that accept food stamps, despite a number of low-income residents. More on that is coming up after headlines and a message from our supporter.
Support for After All Things comes from Hartford HealthCare. More COVID vaccine answers at hartfordhealthcare.org/vaccine or 833-621-0600.
the city of Bridgeport is looking for a property manager to oversee the abandoned Harding High School, as well as 800 more properties, including parks, schools, government buildings, and vacant lots. City officials are calling for improvements after a tour of the shuttered high school this month revealed furniture and equipment that were left untouched after the school closed more than 5 years ago. The Navy is expected to present their findings from investigations into PFAS pollution of drinking water wells on eastern Long Island. The Calverton Restoration Advisory Board meeting on Wednesday will provide the affected community with updates about contamination from a former Grumman Defense manufacturing site. Connecticut's Department of Energy and Environmental Protection usually looks to hire around 100 lifeguards each summer in order to fully staff all 8 state beaches, but only about half of those positions have been filled so far. State beaches were only staffed at 62% in 2021, prompting the state to raise the hourly rate from $16 to $19 in 2022. This year, they're offering $20 an hour as well as 80 hours of paid training. You would think in a rural area like Connecticut's northeast corner with all the farms out there, nutritious food would be abundant and easy to come by. But with very few shopping centers and grocery stores, the area is actually considered a food desert. Jose Martinez is a data reporter with the Connecticut Mirror. He spoke with WSHU's Ebong Udama about some of the challenges the area's low-income residents face and what the state can do to help.
Let's start by talking about what the northeast corner is like. The northeast corner of Connecticut is kind of a rural area. So why is it a food desert?
Yeah, so, you know, the northeast corner, like you mentioned, it's a lot of rural towns, a lot of trees, not a lot of retail stores. And the reason some of these areas are food deserts is because these residents live in spaced out areas where the nearest retail store, grocery store, gas station is at least, you know, a few miles away. And that creates problems for people that have no vehicles, no access to transportation. And so that's why the term is food desert, you know, and there's an official definition that the federal government has. But, you know, in simple terms, it's these areas where it's really hard to get access to areas that have nutritious food. Unlike areas, for example, in Hartford, where you have you know, it's not perfect, but, you know, there's a whole bunch of groceries, a mini market just a street away, or a few other stores with access to nutritious food.
So basically, they have to travel a distance to get to where they can get fresh produce, right?
Yes, exactly.
And that's kind of interesting, considering that this is a pretty rural area and you'd have a lot of farms, and so you might have farm stands. The other thing you mentioned in your article is that a lot of the places that do have groceries don't take food stamps. Why?
Yeah, so it's a variety of reasons. Given that these are rural areas, you know, whether it's a business owner or a store, they're much smaller. And so to have this permit to be accepting food stamps, there's a lot of financial barriers. You know, you have to purchase equipment to start accepting food stamps. There's administrative barriers, you know, a lot of forms you have to fill out, things you have to comply by. They do random inspections sometimes. If you're selling stuff that you're not allowed to sell under SNAP, you could get fined for that. And, you know, it's a variety of reasons. So really what I mentioned in the story is a survey that was done in a different state about, you know, the barriers facing these folks. So that there's a variety of reasons, but the main ones would be administrative and financial resources.
But you do have a lot of low-income people living in these areas. How do they get around this? I mean, with the lack of transportation?
Yeah, so fortunately, some of them may have access to a vehicle, in which case they can make the 15 to 20 minute drive up. Someone like Patty, who we mentioned in the story, she does not have a vehicle. So she relies on friends and family to give her rides to the nearest grocery store. And some rely on public transportation. But what residents are saying is that the shuttle arrivals they're spaced off by over an hour. Even advocates are saying that public transportation can take you to a grocery store where you get frozen goods, but the next shuttle won't arrive until hours later, so it could spoil your foods. So right now there's online deliveries as well, and there are some retailers that accept food stamps online, which is very beneficial. But not every retailer does it yet.
So what are the legislatures looking at this? What are lawmakers talking about? Are there any remedies in the works?
Yeah, so there's one bill, House Bill 6854, that would do two things. One, it would create the Office of the Food Access Advocate. That would basically be like the hub, the center point for all resources related to food deserts, food insecurity, all that stuff, you know, providing financial grants, information, support, all that stuff, which would be really beneficial for those folks looking for, you know, the one-stop shop for all things related to that. Now, the second thing it would do is it would create tax incentives for grocery stores to open up in these underserved areas. There's one caveat, though. The only way these grocery stores would be able to access a tax incentive is if they enter into a labor peace agreement with a union of some sort. And to clarify, that doesn't mean workers have to be legally unionized. That's not what it means. It just means that the employer would agree to not prevent the workers from speaking to the union, not provide them to have access to them, but also the workers and the union wouldn't do any boycotts, any work stoppages, any of that sort of thing. So it's, you know, it's a labor peace agreement. So there's basically peace between both parties. And that's the only way as it's written right now. You know, they still have to debate it some more, talk it out, hash out some details. But as it stands, that's the only way to access the tax incentive.
Basically, one of the reasons grocery stores haven't moved to those areas is that they're sparsely populated. So they don't feel that it was financially viable to have a grocery store in those areas. That's the main reason?
Yeah, it's one of the main reasons. You know, there's a lot of environmental reasons, such as there's not good sewage, not a lot of water access. And sometimes, yeah, like you mentioned, you know, these areas are just not as densely populated as other areas. So, you know, bringing a Walmart or a big supermarket might not be the most profitable business for someone. Although, and also, you know, another thing that plays into a role is local zoning regulations. They vary by town. We have a ton of different towns. So some may have more restrictions on the type of retail that may be allowed.
What's the role of the community markets in this? Is there any incentive for more community markets for cooperatives?
Yeah. So one of the example that we mentioned in the story is Teeg, T-E-E-G. And what they do is a variety of things. The thing that we highlight in the story is that they're a community market. They provide nutritious food for free to any resident that comes in, and they do it every day of the week. You don't have to have food stamps. So whether you have food stamps or not, you can walk in. You have a variety of products to choose from. You have cereal, you know, vegetables, fruits, milk, meats. That stuff that is usually very expensive to get in supermarkets for those low-income folks. And there's a ton of them. It's not just Teeg doing that work. You know, there's a ton all around the state. But Teeg, it was around 300 families they serve a month. And, you know, there's other food banks that help out higher numbers. Some help out a lower number.
So where does it stand as far as the legislation is concerned? Are advocates optimistic that they'll get this through this year?
Right now, what they're waiting on, the bill came out of the Human Services Committee. Now it's going to be sent to the floor and to be discussed and to the other chamber. And then you still have the two money committees that it has to get through, because there's the creating the Office of the Food Access Advocate part. Then there's also the tax incentive. So it might have to go through both, you know, the finance and the appropriations committee. So it still has a way to go. But, you know, advocates are hopeful that it makes it through, so that, you know, it's at least one step closer to bringing in those grocery stores or any other options for these people in underserved areas.
Well, thank you so much, Jose. Jose Martinez is the Connecticut Mirror's data reporter. His article is on the food desert in Connecticut's rural northeast corner. I'm Ebong Udama.
For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio or anytime online at WSHU.org or with the new and improved WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford Healthcare. And if you have any thoughts or story ideas you'd like to share with us, we would love to hear from you. So please send us an email. It's news@WSHU.org. I'm Sabrina Garone. Have a great rest of your evening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.